And for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hi, this is Lita, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the October 10th issue of the Tribune Sentinel, covering Niagara County and Grand Island, on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And on the front page is an article, Alzheimer's Association to Host 2025 Walk to End Alzheimer's. The Western New York chapter of the Alzheimer's Association is inviting Niagara County residents to join the fight to end Alzheimer's by participating in the Alzheimer's Association Walk to End Alzheimer's on Saturday, October 18th at Reservoir State Park in Niagara Falls. Check-in begins at 9 a.m. with opening ceremonies at 10 a.m. and the walk commencing at 10:15 a.m. On walk day, participants honor those affected by Alzheimer's with poignant Promise Garden ceremony, a mission-focused experience that signifies solidarity in the fight against the disease. During the ceremony, walkers carry flowers of various colors, each color representing their personal connection to the disease. This year's blue and yellow flower holders for the Niagara Walk will be Tom and Elizabeth Potempa from Lockport. Tom was diagnosed with early onset frontotemporal dementia last year and will hold the blue flower, which represents someone living with dementia. Elizabeth will carry the yellow flower, which represents a caregiver, as she is Tom's care partner on his journey. Since Tom's diagnosis, Elizabeth has received support from the Alzheimer's Association as his care partner and hosted a caregiver's resource fair at First Trinity Lutheran Church in Tonawanda in June to help others. We are walking to help raise awareness for those living with Alzheimer's and dementia, Elizabeth said. When you walk, there is a sense of companionship that you get from others who are on a similar journey. We want people to know that there is support out there and you are not alone. The Alzheimer's Association has been incredibly helpful with support, education, programs, and the genuine care you get from the people there. This is a pivotal moment in the fight against Alzheimer's. There are now treatments that change the course of the disease, said Caitlin Less, Director of Development for the Western New York Chapter. We hope that everyone in the community can join us to help the Alzheimer's Association raise awareness and funds for families facing the disease today, take more steps toward treatments, and finally end this disease. Nearly 7 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's disease, a leading cause of death in the U.S. Additionally, more than 11 million family members and friends provide care to people living with Alzheimer's and other dementias. In New York, there are more than 426,000 people living with the disease and 543,000 caregivers. The funds raised through the Walk to End Alzheimer's ensures the program and services provided by the Alzheimer's Association are free to all who need them, in addition to funding the research and advocacy efforts that have resulted in new treatments for people living in the early stage. Anyone interested in participating in this year's walk can visit act.alz.org/Niagara to register or learn more. Alzheimer's Association Walk to End Alzheimer's. The Alzheimer's Association Walk to End Alzheimer's is the world's largest event to raise awareness and funds for Alzheimer's care, support, and research. Since 1989, the Alzheimer's Association has mobilized millions of Americans in the Alzheimer's Association Memory Walk. Now, the Alzheimer's Association is continuing to lead the way with Walk to End Alzheimer's. Together, we can end Alzheimer's. The Alzheimer's Association is a worldwide voluntary health organization dedicated to Alzheimer's care, support, and research. Its mission is to lead the way to end Alzheimer's and all other dementia by accelerating global research, driving risk reduction in early detection, and maximizing quality care and support. And you can visit alz.org, or you can call the 1-800 number at 800-272-3900. And in another column, Wheatfield reviewing tentative budget. The 2026 tentative budget has been presented to the Town of Wheatfield Town Board by Supervisor Don McSwan. While there are still some concerns about the inflation rate of this country, I'm pleased to report the Town of Wheatfield will be providing the same services the town has provided in the past, he said as the board's regular business meeting on Monday. However, because of the cost in providing these services are increasing, the 2026 tentative budget does include a slight property tax increase in 2025 and 2026. For the typical homeowner in the town of Wheatfield, with the assessed value of $125,000 or market value of $347,000, this represents a 2.9% increase. McSwan said the increase is largely due to the increased expenditure of $400,000 for refuse removal and recycling. A contract for 8 years with Modern Disposal was set earlier this year. The tentative budget can be found in the town's website. In other news, paving season for the town of Wheatfield is finished, said Highway Superintendent Paul Sigman. We finished up paving last week, he said. We did Pine Lake, and that's it for this year. We did do a lot of roads. Siegman also updated the board on the Fairmont parking lot. The lot was in need of repairs, but a third-party bid was too costly for the town, which prompted the highway department to do the job in-house. Siegman said the lot will hopefully be finished in the spring of 2026, though if the weather holds, it might be done in winter. That in-house job saves the town $100,000, Councilman Larry Helwig said. Water and Sewer Department Head Mark Clark said his department is still looking for the necessary amount of water samples to appease federal guidelines regarding lead set up the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA. The goal is 60 samples from households around Wheatfield, but the response has been lukewarm as only 24 households have responded. Some people are more than willing, others people are too busy in life, and some people are like, no. Clark reported, but we'll get there. McSwan also said some people just don't trust government. The Wheatfield Recreation Department is taking sign-ups for youth basketball clinics. The form is currently on the Recreation Department's website. Registration is underway for boys and girls between the age of 7 and 12, and girls basketball will run on Tuesdays from 6 to 7:30 p.m. starting the 4th of November and running until the 9th of December. Boys basketball starts on the 5th of November and runs until the 10th of December. It will be held Wednesdays between 6 and 7:30 p.m. at the Wheatfield Youth Center's gymnasiums at 2795 Church Road. Resident players will be charged $40 each, while non-residents will pay $80 each, with both getting a 20% discount for each additional child. Leagues for girls will start in January for age 7 through 12, as well as for boys age 7 through 9 and 10 through 12. The fee is $50 per resident player or $90 for non-residents, with 20% discounts for each additional child. McSwan noted pistol permit classes are being offered by the Niagara Gun Range probably before January 2026, with a reduced rate for Wheatfield residents. He noted two classes may be held this year, as last year held such a demand that many applicants were unable to attend. While the date has not been set, McSwan said he'd like to start a pre-registration for Wheatfield residents. The last time they offered this class with a reduced rate for Wheatfield residents, considerably reduced rate, we had to turn people away. We hate to do that. So, if we get so many people who are interested in a class, we'll have two classes. McSwan said interested applicants can contact his office or the town clerk's office about free registration. And in another column, zoning denial cites adverse effects. About a dozen Staley Road residents spoke against zoning variance requests made by a neighbor during a lively and well-attended zoning board hearing on the 2nd of October. Residents said they feared that granting the variances to allow a warehouse-sized storage building with a 6-foot fence in the front yard would be a negative effect on their neighborhood. The 5-member zoning board agreed with the residents and denied all of the variances sought. The proposed structure at 3012 Staley Road is termed as a 10,000-foot building, which is 8,300 square feet, in the description submitted to the board. Sumit Mujumdar, M-A-J-U-M-D-A-R, owner of the property in question, spoke before the town's zoning board of appeals to request height and size variances for a storage facility he planned to build. He also requested a height variance from 3 feet to 6 feet for a front yard fence. Zoning Board Chair Robert Mesmer noted the property has a front yard setback. Mujumdar also applied in September for agricultural district zoning. "I have several animals, including a disabled dog," he explained. "I'm also in the process of getting a rehabilitation license for wildlife and also the processing and storage places for processing of organic garlic that I'll be cultivating on the property." He said there are 6.5 acres of pond on the property. He said he was going to raise chickens and taking care of animals on the remaining area. Mesmer said, "From what I see there, I don't see a whole lot of land available for that." Mujumdar is president of Buffalo Biodiesel, a company that collects cooking oil waste and converts it into biodiesel. His business has been subject to scrutiny, which several residents referred to during their comments to the board. According to Buffalo Business First, 27 restaurants have sued Buffalo Biodiesel over alleged unfair contracts after the company first sued the restaurants for alleged breach of contract. Business First also said the state sent Biodiesel a shutdown notice because it had not submitted a valid permit application. The publication said Mujumdar stated that the company had received an extension from the Department of Environmental Conservation and has hired an engineering firm to help ensure that Buffalo Biodiesel is able to receive a permit. Mary Falzer, who lives close to the Staley Road parcel under review, raised objections to the requested variances. She said she is opposed to a building of this size. "I have not seen one animal and I have a direct view line, not even a dog," she said. Falzer said she was concerned the storage unit is going to end up being for business equipment. "I do not think the intent is really for agricultural or proper storage," she told zoning board members. "I don't know what kind of building would need a 10,000 square foot storage building in a residential area. It should be in a commercial or an industrial area. It shouldn't be that close to the street. It shouldn't be that size and scope. It should be within variance if it's to be a shed for storage." Also speaking against allowing the variances was Staley Road resident Sherry Kern. She said she and her husband, Cal, are vehemently opposed to the requested multiple variances by the owner of 3012 Staley Road. "When we purchased our property on Staley Road in 1979, we chose Staley because it had a country feel," she said. "Many things have changed since then, and many of those joys have been stripped away and no longer exist." She said the road is now heavily traveled, in need of repairs, and unsafe. Kern is a member of the Make Staley Road Safe Committee. "We bring up our concerns at almost every town board meeting and have been doing so for 3 years," she said. Aside from the pharmaceutical companies, Staley Road is zoned as RI, which is residential, not commercial property, Kern said. "Please keep our road R1 by refusing to allow these variances." Brett Lombardo, a member of the town's Agricultural Advisory Board, questioned Mujumdar's stated intent to use an 8,300 square foot building to process and store organic garlic. "That's a whole heck of a lot of garlic to store in that big of a facility," Lombardo said. "I just question what the building is really going to be used for." Paul Zimmerman, who lives next door to 3012 Staley, weighed in on the requested variances. "I don't think we should build a big building like that in front of the front lawn, close to the road," he said. "It's an eyesore to me. I can't look out my kitchen window and I'll see nothing but a big building." When the public meeting was closed, but before their vote, zoning board members gave their opinions of the request based on the presentation and any submitted site plans or documentation. Member Betty Harris said, "I think it's excessive, very excessive. It's too close to the road. It's too commercial in appearance. There's over $3 million value of property in the immediate neighborhood of this surrounding property, and I see devaluation in something like that. And no site view, no nothing. It's a self-created problem." She also said it would cause an undesirable change to the neighborhood. Mesmer said, "My biggest concern is they were talking about agriculture, but I don't see where you can grow enough to do anything." He added, "We have 36 letters here stating that they are against it. The zoning board's rationale in denying all of Majumdar's requests, variances, was that approving them would have an adverse effect on the neighborhood." Several residents again raised the issue of Majumdar's zoning request at the October 6th town board meeting. And just a reminder, you are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Tribune Sentinel covering Niagara County and Grand Island on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And the village of Lewiston pitched a second farmer's market. The Sunday event would not be affiliated with Lewiston Artisan Farmer Market. Town of Lewiston resident Brian Riley is looking to start a Sunday farmer's market at Academy Park beginning in June of 2026. He explained his concept to the Village of Lewiston Board of Trustees at a work session on Monday. "The one thing that is void around here is a pure farmer's market," Riley said. He complimented the existing Lewiston Artisan Farmer Market, which is held Saturdays, while further sharing what would make his version different. Riley said his vision is more in line with a pure farmer's market where people start the week with come in and get their vegetables into a nice family event after church in the morning on Sundays. In addition, a lot of people have expressed interest that we can do a cornhole tournament during the same time period to bring more people to the park during that period, kind of bring some energy to the village early Sundays throughout the summer. Make it kind of a destination for families," Riley said. "I don't know if you've been to the North Tonawanda Farmers Market," he said. He asked trustees. "It's just jammed with thousands, you know. You can't park anywhere near it. We don't want to get to that size. We want to keep it not a lot of vendors. A nice offering of different fruits and vegetables from local farmers. There would be farmers, and there would probably be some beverages, cider and different drinks for kids, coffee," he added. "The Sunday market would run from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. almost every week from June through October." Riley explained he is not a farmer. He said, "My wife does own a food truck, a matcha latte company. We weren't allowed to get into the Lewiston Artisan Farmer Market because it's very restricted." Clerk Shannon Fundis noted Lewiston Artisan Farmer Market's proprietor, Rachel Jolbert, set vendors so her people aren't competing with other people. Trustee Tina Copen said, "I'd like to see a list of who you're thinking of signing up and putting in." Riley said farmers have expressed interest in his idea but are reluctant to commit without a specific date, time, and venue approved by the Village of Lewiston. Trustees asked for more time to consider Riley's idea. Fundis also said she would need a layout proposal to share with local first responders. Riley suggested holding the market closer to the Center Street side of Academy Park. The Lewiston Artisan Farmers Market takes place alongside the Cayuga and South 9th Street sides, but he was told there might not be sufficient electrical outlets in that quadrant. "What are you going to call this?" Mayor Ann Welch asked. "Right now we have Lewiston Artisan Farmers Market," Coppins said. "I don't want to confuse people," Welch said. "We can submit names to you to see what you like," Riley said. He added, I don't want to infringe on Saturdays because she does a nice job. Welch said, I don't want to steal her vendors either and have them say, oh, we're just going to do it on Sunday now instead. She's been doing that a while, and she does a nice job. Hers is a little different, though, Trustee Nice Condi said. I think that the important thing is separating them, and if you're going to do it, make them completely different so people have a reason to visit one or both, Fundus said. Deputy Mayor Vic Edith said there is room for more local farmer participation. Over the weekend, I hit a couple barns out 104 and got to know some of the people, he said. I asked them about coming into Lewiston. They go, no. We go to Tonawanda, Kenmore, Amherst, because those are more traditional farmer markets. Edith suggested Riley stick to that model. I envision it with the old farmer's market in Niagara Falls, Riley said. He added, I'd really like to do the cornhole because I think it gives a twist. I think we just need some more information, like the layout or what you want to do, Fouch said. Fundus suggested Riley also check with the New York State Department of Agriculture about any necessary permitting. He said he'd already initiated contact with the Niagara County Department of Health. Riley is expected to appear before the Village Board again on the 20th of October for the monthly meeting. And from Grand Island, we have this column honoring Hank Kammerer, Islanders' service to community remembered in local ceremonies. In the fall of 1973, the secretary to the general manager, Gibco, now Thermo Fisher Scientific, told her boss about the financial burden she was experiencing when her husband needed to have a leg amputated as a result of complications of diabetes. Doctors and hospital bills would take every penny of savings and home equity that they, the couple, had, said Gregory Jack Kammerer, reading from the memoir of his father, the late Henry Hank Kammerer. Insurance wouldn't pay the bill, Hank Kammerer reported, because the diabetes was considered to be a pre-existing condition. The secretary said that social services advised her that the best thing she could do for her ill husband was to divorce him. Rotarians raised several thousand dollars, used contacts with doctors and hospitals to keep the costs as low as possible, and helped her keep her small home. The Rotary Club looked around and realized that even on Grand Island, there were other situations, not as dramatic, but still in need of temporary help. After the Rotary Club realized the need for temporary help, the Grand Island Neighbors Foundation was created as an island-wide group. On the 6th of October, 52 years after the inception of the Grand Island Neighbor Foundation, a permanent pantry was dedicated at the Grand Island Cultural Center, formerly St. Stephen's Roman Catholic Church's Old Church. A plaque was hung at the entry of the permanent pantry and was officially dedicated to Hank Kammerer. In addition, the Grand Island Rotary Club dedicated a bench near the Grand Island Town Hall gazebo in his memory. Dave Convoy, speaking at the Grand Island Cultural Center, said, Hank was just a giving individual. He worked hard every day in order to give back to the community that he loved, and he helped those that were less fortunate. We want to thank Hank for that. I can't think of a better way to do that than to dedicate our food pantry in his honor. I will say that Jack was gracious enough to give us some funds to help us out to do some renovations that we were able to accomplish. That's really important, so we are set up for success for the next 50 years. The Neighbors Foundation was a real big deal to my dad, Jack Kammerer said. When he passed away in April of last year, Dave and I and others from the foundation had a little bit of a conversation about his work and about how important it was and how we could honor him and carry that forward. Jack Kammerer quoted his father, who wrote in his memoir, It is with pride that I look at 52 years of foundation work, including 25 years as president, as a notable achievement in my life. So what does the foundation do, and who do we help? A family that has been scraping by with a car, and cars are mandatory on Grand Island, with repair bills. They have to pay the repair bill, and there's no money left to buy even the cheapest food. With non-perishable food on hand with the gift cards for Tops, clients can get food when kitchens are bare. At the second ceremony in honor of Hank Kammerer, the dedication of the bench near the Town Hall gazebo, Rotary Club member Diane Gary said, "I would like to thank you for being here today as we celebrate the life and legacy of our dear friend and Rotarian, Henry Hank Kammerer. We are especially honored to be joined by Hank's family, his Rotary colleagues, his Neighbors Foundation colleagues, who just came from dedicating the new pantry to Hank. To the town officials who are breaking from their meeting to come here, thank you. All are here to remember a man who gave so much of himself to our community and to the world. Today, we dedicate this bench to Hank's memory. It's a simple yet lasting tribute to a man who never stopped, making a difference, learning, or helping. This bench is here for people to pause, reflect, and remember Hank's spirit of service." Town Councilman Christian Valida read a proclamation that has been signed by the town board and the town supervisor in honor of Kammerer's lifetime of achievement and service. The town's proclamation recalled Kammerer's work on Grand Island and overseas. Faye Tellock added, "He was an exemplary Rotarian. His life reflects the very best of the Rotary motto of service above self. Through the years, he has taken on challenges, championed causes, and offered time, talent, and heart in service to others. The list of Hank's accomplishments is long and inspiring. From the Miracle League and Veterans Park, to the gazebo we stand in front of, to the establishment of the Neighbors Foundation, he has consistently made a difference. And in the offices of the Rotary, such as President, Executive Secretary, Foundation Chair, and Director, he mentored new members and fostered international goodwill. Hank always led with vision and compassion. These efforts did not go unnoticed. He received many Rotary Awards, including the Once in a Lifetime Avenues of Service in 2013, which was signed by the International President, Tanaka. Each award is more than a plaque or a certificate. It's a symbol of the countless lives touched, the hands extended in friendship, and the hope kindled in service both nationally and internationally." And just a little public service announcement here in regards to food assistance. If you need food, for confidential assistance, you can call the Neighbors Foundation of Grand Island at 716-775-7998, or you can go to GI Neighbors 14072@gmail.com. And they are a volunteer organization that provides confidential food assistance to Grand Island neighbors through the generosity of individual churches and other groups who donate funds and non-perishable goods. And just a little blip here, tickets are available for Community Missions Chevy Silverado raffle. The Community Missions announced tickets are now available for its 2026 Chevrolet Silverado 1500 High Country Truck Raffle, a fundraiser for its crisis and community services. Only 1,200 tickets will be sold at a cost of $100 each, with the winner drawn at the 100th anniversary gala at 8 p.m. on the 14th of November, which is a Friday, at the Sheraton Niagara Falls. The truck, valued at approximately $80,000, holy smokers, features a black exterior, a crew cab, power sunroof, and a 6.2-liter Ecotec V8 engine. The winner may select a $60,000 cash prize in lieu of the car if they prefer. The raffle is being conducted in conjunction with David Chevrolet. Proceeds benefit the agency's crisis and community services, including the community kitchen, food pantry, clothes closet, and emergency housing shelter. "We are thrilled to be able to offer the community an opportunity to win a great truck like the 2026 Silverado High Country," said Christian Hoffman, Vice President of Public Relations and Development for Community Missions. We have had a great response by offering tickets raffles like this in the past, and we are so pleased that excitement can benefit those that we serve here at Community Missions. All tickets must be purchased in person with cash, check, or credit cards accepted. Tickets can be purchased during typical business hours at Community Missions, 1570 Buffalo Avenue in Niagara Falls, or arrangements can be made by contacting Serena O'Malley at 716-285-3403, extension 2230, or SOMALLEY at communitymissions.org. Again, just a reminder, you are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Tribune Sentinel covering Niagara County and Grand Island on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Had another quick little note here. After 36 years of directing the Francis Center's Women's Respite Program, Sister Diane Giannata recently retired. To honor the women who had helped countless women dealing with cancer or financial challenges, a special party was held Sunday at Stella Niagara. The event included live music, guest speakers, refreshments, including two cakes, and a slew of gifts presented to Sister Diane. Teresa Macchiacco is the new director of the Women's Respite Program. And if you'd like more information on that particular program, you can visit https://womensrespite.org. Or you can go to https://www.francescenter.com/. And in a column, 2025 Mason Forever Foundation Award winners announced. The Mason Forever Foundation was established in honor of Mason Sawyer Monteleone, an interdisciplinary health science major at the University of Florida in Tallahassee, who tragically died in a car accident at the age of 21. He was interested in becoming a physician assistant or an orthopedic surgeon. He graduated from Canisius High School in Buffalo and attended middle school at Lewiston Porter. A scholarship was formed in Mason's honor. This year's local scholarship recipients are Lewiston Porter High School graduates Rayanne Shaikh, S-H-A-I-K-H, a biology major at Niagara University, Alyssa Auer, A-U-E-R, a nursing major at Alfred State College, Dominic Tracy, a biochem pre-med major at University of Florida, Ava Wilkie, a biology or health exercise major at Wake Forest University, Liliana Unversa, a physician assistant major at James Madison University, Maya Marcian, a socio-medical science major at SUNY Geneseo, Aiden Weiss, graduate of Canisius High School, a biology pre-med major at SUNY Geneseo, Robert Dickey, a Canisius High School grad and physical ed major at Canisius University, and Barbara Kuntz, a graduate of the Buffalo Academy of the Sacred Heart and a physical therapy major at DeUville. Other awardees include Austin Fowler at Center Moriches, a medical science major at, I'm going to spell it, M-I-S-E-R-I-C-O-R-D-I-I, Miss Ricordia University, and Carson Howerton of Longdale, Oklahoma, a dietetics major at the University of Oklahoma. Students are awarded scholarships based on their course of study, grade point average, commitment to the medical health fitness programs, professions, It's sports involvement and community service. The Mason Forever Foundation supports the community and youth interested in medical health, fitness, and sports. Its major fundraising event is an annual 5K that is held in May or June every year. There also will be a meat raffle on the 14th of November at the Lewiston Fire Company No. 1. Mason Forever Foundation is partnering with Lou Porter Boys Basketball. There will be a special Christmas 50-50 raffle for UP Academy in Dorchester, Massachusetts, and a basket raffle and silent auction as well. Those interested in purchasing a ticket for the event can contact Tracy at 716-525-0409 or Jamie, at 716-471-1240. Or you may visit www.masonforever.com to donate or to learn about scholarship opportunities and community events. And in the news, trunk or treat event to be held at Lewiston Presbyterian Church. The First Presbyterian Church of Lewiston and Lewiston Artisan Farmers Market will host the second annual Community Halloween Trunk or Treat from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the 25th of October, which is a Saturday, in the back parking lot adjacent to the church social hall at 505 Cayuga Street. The event is free and open to all in the community to either participate with decorating cars and trunks or to bring the family for tricks or treats, spooktacular giveaways, and fun games for all ages. The church is handicap accessible. Parking is available on the street or in a large lot in the back. Worship services are open to all and are held at 11:15 a.m. each Sunday. You can visit www.lewistonpres.org or email the church at firstpreslewiston@gmail.com or visit them on Facebook. And the Friends of the Lewiston Library's annual friendly gathering will take place at 6 p.m. on the 29th of October, which is a Wednesday, at 305 South 8th Street. This event is open to the public and all are welcome to come and celebrate the support and gifts the Friends were able to obtain for the Lewiston Library. The volunteer organization provides support through a variety of fundraisers, including a book sale room and various raffles. This year's gathering will feature catered appetizers, champagne, wine, and desserts. It is always one of the most popular and well-attended events of the year. In addition, Jeff Manning will receive the Volunteer of the Year Award. He has dedicated hundreds of hours to the library working on the obituary database. Tickets are $20 pre-sale or $25 at the door. You can RSVP by calling Joanne at 716-531-2313. And the Garden Club news. The Lewiston Garden Club met on the 22nd of September at the Lewiston Public Library. Dorothy Julius, owner of Along Gardens Path and first assistant director of the 8th District Federated Garden Clubs, led an educational workshop for attendees. She provided guidance as to how to use flowers from our own gardens to create festive holiday floral decorations. A business meeting followed the presentation, and members of the Garden Club approved the following expenditures: $1,500 of matching funds toward an upward Niagara Chamber of Commerce project to replace trash cans and picnic tables in the village of Lewiston, $5,000 to be used to place a fence on the eastern property line of the Historical Association of Lewiston, Lewiston Museum grounds, $7,629 for 223 fence post wreaths that will be placed on fence posts along Center Street during the holiday season, and $2,000 for improvements to the Tui Park Garden near the red brick splash pad. Funds for these endeavors were raised via the Garden Club's perennial sale and Garden Fest. Garden Fest 2026 will be held June 20th and 21st. The next meeting of the Garden Club will be at 5 p.m. on the 27th of October at Messiah Lutheran Church on Oneida Street. A potluck supper will be followed by a business meeting and then a speaker from the Cornell Cooperative Extension. Guests are welcome. More information is available at www.lewistongardenfest.com. And from the governor's office, Hochul extends executive order ensuring New Yorkers can receive updated 2025-26 COVID shots. Governor Kathy Hochul recently announced an extension of Executive Order 52, which allows pharmacists to continue administering COVID vaccines, providing access to all New Yorkers who wish to be vaccinated. The executive order will be in place for at least another 30 days while work continues on a long-term legislative solution to protect the immunization and healthcare rights of New Yorkers. Additionally, Hochul is calling on the federal government to make the COVID-19 vaccine available through the Vaccines for Children, or the VFC program. As of now, the Trump administration has yet to make COVID-19 vaccines available for states to order through its VFC program. In the interim, and out of an abundance of caution, Hochul has directed the Department of Health to explore additional solutions to make sure all children, including uninsured kids, have access to the vaccines they need to stay safe and healthy. I've been clear with New Yorkers that even as Washington continues its misguided campaign against science, I will always do what I can to ensure New Yorkers have access to the vaccines and information families need to make decisions about their health care, with no exceptions, Hochul said. I will sign as many extensions of this executive order as I need to. We will always let science lead the way, not politics. New York State Health Commissioner Dr. James McDonald said Governor Hochul's swift action ensures that every eligible New Yorker will continue to have access to the updated COVID-19 vaccine. And as we call on federal governments to make this vaccine available through the Vaccines for Children's program, the department will keep working to remove barriers and protect families' access to life-saving immunization. Vaccine saves lives, and we will always stand with New Yorkers to safeguard their health. The executive order is part of Hochul's long-term strategy to protect access to vaccinations in New York. The governor will begin working with the legislature on a legislative solution to ensure permanent and continuing access to vaccines, including administration of vaccines by healthcare providers, professionals, and insurance coverage of vaccines. New York is also working in coordination with and helping to lead a regional multi-state public health collaboration among Northeast states, which bring together public health leaders across the region to develop evidence-based recommendations and approaches on vaccination, disease surveillance, and emergency preparedness. The collaborative also supports state public health laboratories in sharing resources and expertise to strengthen regional readiness. Last month, McDonald issued a standing order for the COVID vaccine that is still in effect, ensuring that pharmacists statewide can continue to provide timely and convenient access. McDonald and the Department of Health will continue to issue detailed guidance to support pharmacies, clinicians, and other vaccine administrators. And from Grand Island, if you didn't like standing on the sidelines watching or listening to a football game in the cold or in the rain or whatever, and your feet get tired, no longer will hardy Grand Island football fans have to stand to see their team in action. Instead, they will be able to sit in comfort as the Grand Island Vikings sail up and down the field. Seats to accommodate 850 spectators were installed last week by Snyder Tank Corporation of Buffalo. The permanent installation consists of elevated bleachers, 114 feet long and 12 rows high. Three wide aisles permit easy access and exit. Authorities of the high school are very pleased with the bleachers and the fact that they have been installed early enough in the season to assure comfort to spectators. Everyone is invited to attend to see the new bleachers and see the high school's fine team in action. So get out there and support your team. And the Historical Association of Lewiston is welcoming Bud Bailey to its next program titled Let's Talk Sports, a conversation with Bud Bailey. This presentation will be at 7 p.m. on the 23rd of October, which is a Thursday, at the Lutheran Church of the Messiah Fellowship Hall at 915 Oneida Street. Bailey has, for the past 50 years, written about the players, statistics, and the history of Buffalo's professional teams. His topics cover the gamut from the Buffalo Braves NBA basketball team to the Bills, Sabres, and Bandits of today. He is the author of 16 sport books, with the latest being published later this month, One Bills Drive. It's a look at the top 50 games played so far at the Orchard Park Stadium. Bailey speaks about sports in a way that few could rival, peppering his talks with funny, behind-the-scenes anecdotes and little-known facts. He has given a series of talks at senior centers with colleagues Stu Boyer, who used to work at sports in sports at WGRZ-TV and graduated from Syracuse University with Bud in 1977. Bailey is a journalist who retired in 2017 after working 23 years at the Buffalo News. During that time, he won the Tom Borelli Award as the National Lacrosse League's Media Personality of the Year in 2011. He will have some of his books for sale. This community gathering is free and open to all, but donations are greatly appreciated to help support the Lewiston Museum. Refreshments will be served. And a church donates trail bridges. RFPs going out for meter replacements. Boy. The Grand Island Town Board, at its regular meeting Monday, accepted the donation of two aluminum bridges for use in the Sandy Wood Veterans Trail System, which is off Huth Road. The donation is being made by Island Presbyterian Church for a value of $84,328. Supervisor Pete Marston said the church has disbanded and wanted to help the town with this project. "I'm absolutely taken aback by how awesome this is," Marston said. "I can't help being excited about our Sandy Wood Trail upgrades," he said. "Those bridges should arrive probably next week and we can start assembling them and hopefully have them in place before the weather gets bad this year," Marston said. "Next year, we'll look into potentially putting on a surface and then we'll have a bikeable way from Huth Road to Veterans Park. So you can build Rome in a day, but we're working on it." The town has created two trail systems, Scenic Woods and Nike-based Park. The Scenic Woods Park and its trails are near the Sandy Wood Circle residential area on the east side of the island. And the island also benefits from the trails located in Beaver Island and Buckhorn Island State Parks and the Western New York Land Conservancy's 145-acre Marjorie Galogli Nature Sanctuary. And in other news, the town board authorized the engineering department to proceed with the process of sending out a request for proposals from vendors for townwide replacement of aging water meters with a new high-tech system of remote wireless meters. I'll only say that I'm really pushing this hard to have this set and have our vendors picked and be ready to go first quarter of 2026. A flat fee of $17 per quarter was added to each water bill starting in April to provide what the town board deemed the most equitable revenue stream for the replacement project that is expected to provide better customer service and reduce operating costs. And moving over to a column, Marble Orchard Ghost Walk is a ghost walk like no other. The Lewiston Council on the Arts invites you on the Marble Orchard Ghost Walk, an eerie and unforgettable journey through the shadows of Lewiston's haunted history. The quest to craft a truly unique experience began with in-depth research by Lewiston genealogist Michelle Kratz, who unearthed gripping stories of family feuds, mysterious drownings, tragic fires, and more. True events rooted in Lewiston's rich and often chilling history. These stories were transformed into vivid theatrical vignettes brought to life by a talented ensemble of actors. Composer Michael Dean contributes original songs that helped narrate Lewiston's tale of yesteryear. I wanted to make our performance as theatrical and immersive as possible, said Maria Fortuna Dean, executive director of the Lewiston Council of the Arts. Each year, we enhance the walk with more lighting, sound effects, and original music. This year's walk features an all-new final scene in the graveyard, The Bride of Sorrow, a haunting retelling of Lewiston native Nina Starkweather's tale of true love tragically denied. Join us at the gazebo at 4th and Center Street as we travel together through the haunted streets of Lewiston. Ghosts, legends, and lore await. It's not just history, it's a walk with the spirits. All shows start at 7 p.m. on the 24th, 26th, and 28th and 30th of October. Tickets are on sale now. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit www.artcouncil.org. And flipping over to the opinions, Town Board has chance to make right decision on President's Park proposal, and this is submitted by Clay Miller. A year and a half ago, I attended my first town board meeting after getting a notice of a public hearing on President's Park, the up to 210-unit apartment complex up for vote in Lewiston. I attended because I was interested to see how our local government worked. My conclusion? Not very well. Over the past year, a group of concerned citizens has been communicating with environmental scientists from Syracuse University, lawyers from New York City, hunting rights advocates from Tennessee, and a myriad of other experts in such matters. After looking at all the documents sent to them, obtained through the Freedom of Information, they all have the same conclusion. This project, as proposed, is bad for our town, it is bad for our neighbors, and it is bad for our environment. Sadly, many of our elected officials haven't taken any time to do independent research on the impact. Over the past weeks, I have seen several videos posted by Mr. Broderick and Mr. Muriel in their bid for re-election, highlighting what they have accomplished. It seems the biggest accomplishment have been installing LED light bulbs, a bocce ball court, and a nice trail to walk dogs on. Mr. Broderick and Mr. Muriel would tell you in the same videos that developers have the right to build on their property as they see fit. Of course, any property owner has the right to do what they want on their land, but what is always absent when this argument is raised by them in public forums or online videos is the second part of that commonly used statement, the most important part. A property owner can and should be able to do what they want on their land so long as it doesn't negatively impact the neighbors or community. The totality of the impact of this project will be a negative one. That is a fact. Ms. Watchter and Mr. Jacoby said as much when they voted no for the concept plan. If President's Park is built, it will represent an existential threat to the 3F Club, which would be set to become neighbors with the development. The closest two buildings of President's Park are a stone's throw from the club's property line. Within months, noise complaints will likely begin, and lawsuits will start. Anyone with Google and 5 minutes to spare can see the myriad of examples of this happening in the United States. Suppose the scenario here was reversed. A large conversation club with hunting and rifle ranges wanted to build next to a massive apartment complex. Every single person who lived in the apartments would say it would be a bad idea and impact on the quality of their living conditions, not to mention safety. Most of the people in the town would say it is a bad idea. The town wouldn't allow the project. Why? Because they would say that it will negatively impact their neighbors. A few months ago, I was told the story of an elderly woman who lives in Morgan Farms. She awoke one day to find her basement filled with fetid raw sewage, close to 2 feet deep after a rainstorm. With no flood insurance and on a fixed income, her and her husband tried to remediate their basement the best they could by themselves, but it has left their home virtually unsellable. President's Park will add another 60,000 gallons of water, wastewater, to potentially go into our neighbors' basements or our river. With an additional 60,000 gallons, is the chance for more raw sewage flooding better or worse? Of course it is worse. How could it not be? Why hasn't this problem been fixed? When will it be fixed? There is one more vote left for President Parks, and it will come after Election Day. The current board is split 3-2 on the matter. With Mr. Broderick, Muriel, and Jason Myers all voting yes, Mr. Bill Burke has voted yes for the project on the planning board. Several of the challengers this year have already spoken out against the project. Paul Klosterman is on record saying he is totally against the project, citing all the negative impacts above. Every elected official I have met in this town seems like a good person. They have had very successful professional careers and deserve praise for being public servants. However, they failed on executing what they set out to do. Fixing the town code, fixing the wastewater issues, fixing our infrastructure. Had they been able to complete what they set out to do, maybe this project would be more palatable to most residents. Let us not have President Park, as presently proposed, be a monument to a missed chance to protect what makes Lewiston great: our people, our culture, our neighbors, and our environment. And from Sheriff John Garcia, protect yourself from scams. The concept of bad actors scamming innocent victims is nothing new. However, the frequency of scams being reported to the police and new technology that makes them easier to perpetrate is cause for concern. The details of scams vary from scheme to scheme. However, many have a few common denominators. Just about all of them involve a telecommunication method these days. Additionally, they often involve a phone number or email address that you won't recognize, whether the message claims to be your bank, a policy number, a police agency, a commerce business, or anyone else. It is best to reach out to that entity through a verified contact method rather than the number or email address that you're urged to contact. To their credit, financial institutions generally do a great job training their tellers on signs to look out for in the event a potential victim comes to their window. Trust the teller. If they suggest that you are being scammed, take a step back and think about their advice before acting. Safeguarding your personal identifiable information also extends to your driveway. If you leave your vehicle unlocked, thieves can access to everything in it. That could include your driver's license, registration, and insurance information. In the wrong hands, details from those documents, particularly your driver's license, could be used against you. If it is lost or stolen, it's a good idea to freeze your credit. And if you unfortunately become a victim, each minute counts. Call the Erie County Sheriff's Office or your local police agency as soon as possible. And that's it for me. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the October 10th issue of the Tribune Sentinel, covering Niagara County and Grand Island. This is Lita. I've been your reader. Thanks for listening. Take care, and as always, keep smiling.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have the Lockport Union Sun and Journal. At 6 o'clock, we got the Wall Street Journal off duty, and at 7 o'clock, we got Harper's Magazine. Stay with us for these readings and more. If you or people you know shop at any of the Dash's supermarkets, please save Dash's register tapes for radio reading. Our agency receives $2 for every $100 in Dash's register tapes. Radio reading has raised thousands of dollars so far. Anyone can drop off their Dash's tapes to the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service at 1199 Harlem Road, Cheektowaga, between William and Clinton Streets. Or Dash's tapes can be mailed to the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service at 1199 Harlem Road, Cheektowaga, New York, 14227. Any questions on Dash's tapes for radio reading? Call us at 716-821-5555, and thanks for caring.
following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision,